This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I wouldn't personally advise anyone to use it to treat COVID-19. At the moment, there is no proven treatment. I don't think people should expect that it will cure COVID-19 because that has not been proven scientifically. We still have to test its effectiveness and prove that it is effective before it is widely promoted.
That's South African virologist Dr. Dennis Chopra talking about an herbal tea promoted by Madagascar's president to fight COVID-19. Details coming up also. A chief advisor to the director of the World Health Organization, Dr. Sanait Fusaha, says the world needs U.S. leadership in the fight against the coronavirus now more than ever. All these and more next on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. South Africa's government says 30,000 health workers have screened about 7 million people for the new coronavirus. That's more than one-tenth of the population. They are using a method known as active case finding, in which community health workers identify people with COVID-19 symptoms so they can be tested. If they test positive, they're isolated and treated. Darren Taylor reports.
The World Health Organization has described South Africa's testing effort as incredible, but the scientist in charge of it says she and her teams have been fortunate.
The fact that we have a severe HIV epidemic has in fact built amazing capacity in South Africa that prepares.
Professor Karesha Abdul Karim says they've been able to use infrastructure and testing blueprints established years ago for HIV. She and her fellow medical experts have been mapping the spread of HIV, testing for it, and investigating outbreaks for more than 30 years. That vast knowledge is now being applied to fight coronavirus.
All the labs with the equipment and apparatus that we have really enabled us to do this rapid response. And what we're starting to see is a better picture of where the virus is, where the outbreak's taking place. And as we continue to monitor that, we'll be able to sharpen our response and continue with our goal of flattening the curve.
To use the method of active case finding, other countries would need to employ and train tens of thousands of people at a cost of billions of dollars to screen and trace contacts. But South Africa had the teams in place from the beginning of the COVID-19 epidemic. They'd been detecting tuberculosis and HIV, the rates of which are some of the highest in the world, for decades. Courageous screeners go house to house to interview people in areas pinpointed as particularly vulnerable to coronavirus.
The household surveys are critically important in terms of identifying those flames. So if we can identify where those fires are, we can also do a geospatial mapping in terms of where infections are, because this isn't something that's spreading evenly across the country. When we find cases...
South Africa's lead scientist on COVID-19 is Karesha's husband and fellow epidemiologist Salim Abdul Karim. He says only about 3% of 280,000 people tested so far have been confirmed as having the virus.
That basically tells you we have to do a lot of testing just to find one positive. 40 tests just to find one positive.
Salim says this effort is putting great pressure on strained resources.
Our priority is to ensure that we make testing readily available at all healthcare settings. So anybody who is sick, anybody coming in with an acute respiratory disease should have a test. Our tests are for patients presenting clinically. We have to protect that group.
South Africa is also using mobile clinics for testing. Salim says it's sensible at this stage for the country to do about 10,000 tests a day which it's achieving. But he adds, as the percentage of infected people increases, testing must scale up.
At that stage, there will be more people who are positive. So we're not doing 40 tests just to find one patient, but rather we're doing 10 tests to find one patient.
Coronavirus outbreaks are becoming regular across South Africa, from police stations to pharmacies to grocery stores. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
There's no proven medical cure or prevention against COVID-19, but Madagascar's president, Andry Rajoelina, claims a beverage brewed from a local herb can fight the disease. The herb, called Artemisia, is commonly used to make tea. Madagascar has shipped the herbal mixture to other African countries. But Madagascar has not released any scientific proof or Artemisia's effectiveness against COVID-19. For more, VOA's Jason Patankin spoke to virologist Dr. Denise Chopra in South Africa.
There's a lot of interest in this product coming out of Madagascar made from this local herb called Artemisia. Can you begin by explaining what do you know about Artemisia?
What I know about it is it's available, it grows wildly in quite a number of African countries. For example, if you go to Zimbabwe, you will find this in your supermarket as a herbal tea, you know, pretty much like green tea and so on. People consume it for quite a number of illnesses, primarily malaria.
Is this actually useful or is this actually effective in fighting COVID-19, which is what the president of Madagascar claims?
We do not know. But my own perception is that the president of Madagascar, even with the resources that they have, even with meager resources that we have in Africa, I think it is very easy to set up a very basic clinical trial so that at least we can prove that it is effective. And that has not been done. And if I remember correctly, just last week or the week before, even the Minister of Health in Madagascar was skeptical about its effectivity.
And so what would your recommendation be to people, whether in Madagascar or in any country in the world, what would your recommendation be if they are considering using this product to either prevent COVID-19 or to treat COVID-19?
I wouldn't personally advise anyone to use it to treat COVID-19. At the moment, there is no proven treatment that has been effective. And we've seen people are just, I think even out of desperation, are pretty much resorting to taking anything that they come across. But I don't think people should expect that it will cure COVID-19 because that has not been proven scientifically.
This isn't the first time when a president has promoted a cure for COVID-19 without the completion of clinical trials. In the United States, for instance, President Donald Trump promoted chloroquine, hydroxychloroquine, which are also both used to fight malaria. Clinical trials were not completed, and so far there is no evidence that has succeeded. Do you think we're looking at a similar case here with Artemisia in Madagascar?
I think so, and I think the only difference is that now there's widespread use beyond Madagascar of this herb. Which is not the case, I assume, in the USA, where I don't think a lot of people are using chloroquine as a treatment for COVID-19. We've had quite a number of drugs that have been speculated to be effective, and they've been put to trial. So I think we still have to go through that process of actually conducting trials, even if they're small and rapid, so that at least we've got scientific evidence to demonstrate that whatever we recommend people to use has been tested scientifically to be effective.
Now, one of the reasons that people are very excited about this product from Madagascar is they're saying it's African. It comes from Africa. It's not an instance of a medicine being developed in the West or in China or another country and being given or distributed in Africa. It's coming from Africa itself. What is your response to this?
Yeah, I think that's a positive. And if it was to be shown that it is effective, I think this will be a great breakthrough for Africa because it's something that grows wildly. But at the moment, we still have to test its effectiveness and prove that it is effective before it is widely promoted.
That was Dr. Denise Chopra, a virologist in South Africa, speaking about Madagascar's unproven COVID-19 treatment to VOA's Jason Patinkin. Despite no evidence supporting Artemisia's use against COVID-19, Tanzania's president, John Magufuli, says he will import the herbal mixture. Magufuli has taken a slow approach of COVID-19 without closing places of worship. On Sunday, he said Tanzania's coronavirus tests were faulty, and the head of the country's National Health Laboratory in charge of testing was suspended. But today, the director of the Africa Centers for Disease Control rejected Magufuli's claim. Dr. John Nkengasong, who has combated HIV/AIDS and Ebola outbreaks for decades, said Tanzania's tests work well. Nkengasong's organization supplied the tests with a donation by Chinese billionaire Jack Ma's foundation. Like many other countries, Zimbabwe is trying to stop the spread of the coronavirus. In all the chaos, some crucial sectors of society may be forgotten. Reporter Kuzai Zanawashi speaks with the Zimbabwe Parks and Wildlife Management Authority about how they have been affected by the outbreak.
Tinashe Farao is the public relations manager for Zimbabwe Parks and Wildlife Management Authority, or ZIMPARKS. He said they have not been spared.
We are not in exception. We have been severely affected. I think you know that most of our conservation activities are funded from the tourism activities. And because tourists are not coming, as I'm speaking to you now, we have gone down to zero, so which means zero income.
ZIMPARKS is among the essential services that are still operational during Zimbabwe's lockdown. Farao explains what this means.
Which means we are on duty. We are deploying rangers on the ground. We are doing our joint patrols. We are doing all other activities to do with law enforcement. And those activities, they need resources. This now confirms what we've always been saying, to say tourism alone cannot fund conservation efforts.
He says they have been on high alert because poachers may want to capitalize on the focus on COVID-19. He, however, says what they find worrying has been the human-wildlife conflict.
What is important to note is the increased cases of human-wildlife conflict. We have lost at least 7 lives. These are the incidences that we have always spoken about.
Farao says over 30 lives were lost to human-wildlife conflict last year. He says elephants have been involved in more cases in this conflict. He adds the elephant population has grown along with the human population and have to share the same space as before, setting the stage for a life-threatening conflict. And as the elephant population grows, vegetation is also at risk.
We are also talking about the destruction of vegetation. Our job is not only to look about after wildlife, but to look about the whole biodiversity. They're overpopulated.
He adds that the destructive nature of elephants includes knocking down big trees. He says, in the past, government controlled the population through culling, but that's no longer happening. He says, because of these challenges, ZIMPARKS has to think outside the box in terms of resources and maintaining a balanced ecosystem. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
The chief advisor to the World Health Organization, Director General Dr. Sanait Fissaha, says the world needs U.S. leadership in the fight against coronavirus now more than ever. She called for the U.S. to rethink its funding suspension and asked world leaders to remember that during this pandemic, that we are all in this together. VOA Salem Salamon recently spoke to Dr. Fissaha and has this report.
U.S. President Donald Trump has ordered his administration to halt funding for the World Health Organization. He accuses the organization of doing the bidding of China in the battle against coronavirus.
We give $500 million. We have over the years from 400 to 500 for a long time, for many years. And China is giving $38 million. And yet they seem to work for China. And they should have been in there early. They should have known what was going on. And they should have been able to stop it at the...
But Dr. Sanait Fasaha, a chief advisor to the WHO's director general, says to move forward with the decision is devastating and that the U.S. should rethink the move.
Where we're going to feel the pinch the most is going to be around routine services like immunizations, you know, life-saving interventions that the WHO provides in collaboration with national governments. So this is not good news. Of course, the decision is not final.
She says it is disastrous to make this move in the middle of a pandemic. The WHO is providing global surveillance of the spread of the disease, coordinating with the international response, and giving advice and training to health practitioners.
The WHO, as well as allies of global public health, continue to negotiate and reach out with the U.S. government to see what can be done to reverse the course. In fact, if anything, this is the time where U.S. leadership is enormously critical globally, and not only we expect and we hope funding will be reinstated, but rather we want to see an increase in funding to fight this pandemic all in this together.
The WHO has received criticism for early missteps in response to the virus. On January 14, the organization tweeted that Chinese authorities had found no evidence of human-to-human transmission of the virus. This proved to be false. The WHO also waited until March 11th to declare coronavirus a global pandemic. By that time, cases had been recorded in 110 countries. Critics say the WHO should have done more to see that China shared its samples of the virus with international researchers.
But the World Health Organization's regulatory arm clearly failed during this pandemic.
That was U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. But Sanait says the WHO seeks to stay out of politics and maintain a relationship with all countries in order to have access to information. She pointed out that early on, the WHO sent a team of international scientists to China to investigate the outbreak. Within 2 weeks of the first public report of the virus, the WHO was able to share the sequenced gene of the virus, which was used to create diagnostic tools and for research on a vaccine.
And frankly, the world is able to do this only because WHO can coordinate this response. As you know, a lot of countries have bilateral relationship. The United States has a relationship with China. But those bilateral relationships are fraught with a lot of politics. And what the WHO tries to do is stay away from that politics and focus on global public health.
The WHO Director General, Dr. Tedros Adhanom, has also been under fire for praising China's transparency in reporting about the virus at a time many believe Chinese officials were underreporting the extent of the outbreak. Republican members of the U.S. House of Representatives have written a letter accusing Tedros of supporting a Chinese propaganda campaign and demanding that Tedros release all correspondence between the WHO and Chinese officials. Sanait, who's originally from Ethiopia and has worked with the Director General on public health issues for 20 years, says he is a leader of the highest integrity. She pointed out that during his time as Ethiopia's Minister of Health, he relentlessly worked to decrease maternal mortality, HIV/AIDS infections, malaria, tuberculosis, and mortality for children under 5 years old.
He was highly focused, he was highly precise, he was fantastic in garnering partnerships and collaboration and support.
Sanait believes Tedros will weather the storm of criticism and is the right person to lead the World Health Body.
There are going to be critics. It doesn't mean that Dr. Tedros is a perfect person. The good thing about him is he has a growth mindset. He's always willing to learn and grow and improve. But the truth is some of the attacks that have been targeted at him during this time are heavily unfounded. They are very political.
Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
Hidden victims of the COVID-19 outbreak are women who during public health lockdowns are stuck inside with violent domestic partners. For more, VOA's Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick filed this report.
For many women, the coronavirus lockdowns mean days and weeks in isolation with their abuser. Rights activists say around the world they're seeing a rise in domestic violence. I spoke to Agnes Odhiambo from Human Rights Watch in Kenya, and I asked her about the risks to women's personal safety.
It's a very difficult situation. Domestic violence is invisible. It happens behind closed doors, locked doors. Morning, day and night, you're stuck with your abuser in an environment where there's a lot of stress. I was speaking with someone who works at a shelter for survivors of domestic violence in Kenya. And she gave me the story of this 16-year-old girl who was kidnapped by a man. And this man stayed with her for 4 days before she was rescued by neighbors and sexually assaulted her. And you know, slum areas are very congested, their houses are tiny. And she was saying to me that this is the discourse in the slum areas now, where men are saying that they cannot just stay in the houses bored, and there are all these women, including girls who are not in school. We are fearing that we are going to see very many cases of domestic violence, of sexual abuse, including planned pregnancies for girls. I'm based here in Kenya. Government is taking all kind of measures. I have not seen at any point seen them calling out for public participation into what the government should be doing better. That needs to change, and governments across Africa need to hear the voices of women. But I think this is really a learning moment, and we need to learn and take that on board and move with it even beyond the COVID pandemic.
I asked Agnes what her advice is to any woman who really fears for her personal safety, who might be in trouble and wants to reach out for help, especially as cities, neighborhoods, and communities are in lockdown.
Violence is a crime, and if you're facing it, you need to speak out and look for help. In our communities, even in these places, in the slum areas, in the ghettos, they always have a social safety network, and so there's a way of reaching out. For example, in Kenya here, we have what they call gender defenders, who are just women within the community who you have their phone number, you can call and say, this is happening to me, can you help me to get out of this situation? And one of the things we are pushing for and asking governments to make sure they do is to treat services for survivors of domestic violence as essential services. If shelters are not enough, just the way they are finding accommodation in hotels for victims of COVID-19, they need to do the same for survivors of domestic violence, because you cannot stay in an abusive situation. It's a very big risk to women's life and to women's health. And whenever there's an opportunity in your communities to be involved in shaping the action that governments are doing right now, make sure that your voice is heard. You know, send WhatsApp, send text, call whoever is going there. Make sure that your voice is being heard.
That was Agnes Odhiambo from Human Rights Watch in Kenya, speaking to VOA's Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, I thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.